fans. Welcome back, fans of Rule the Galaxy. We've got Joe in the pilot's chair tonight. And is it pilot's chair or pilot's seat? I'll figure that out when I get Nick on here. We got Nick Chesky being the co-pilot. And we're going to bring you the finality, the end of the Darth Bane trilogy here on this edition of Lothal Library. This has been a great trilogy. We've enjoyed talking about it. I personally have enjoyed buzzing through it 10 years later than everybody else and learning about Darth Bane. I now need to get a Darth Bane action figure for my collection. And I think, as I bring Nick on here in a second, I think now 4 out of the 8 Rule of the Galaxy crew have read the Darth Bane trilogy. So we are really turning the corner on this, and we want to send out a special shout out to Drew Karpyshyn, because he's made it to where we're all big fans of this character. But enough of me yapping here. To start the show, Nick Chesky along with us. How you doing, Nick? And welcome aboard.
I'm doing great. Four out of eight is pretty good for most of the guys. I would say, you know, some of them are big book guys, some of them are not. But Drew, I'm curious, as we start this, I know at one point you had said, I didn't read the Bane books because they're not canon anymore. Has this series, as we're wrapping up this one, has this changed your mind on canon, non-canon books? Has it increased the desire to go back, read more? Or where do you sit on it?
It definitely has. And you know, one of my favorite books of non-canon is the Kenobi one, because I love that character, Ben Kenobi. And of course, we thought it was going to be canon, and we want to see that story between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. But now that we've got this rolling, I've loved the Darth Bane books. My next scheduled planned books are Darth Revan and the Plagueis book. Those are on the burner for me to read, and I know they're not canon, but like you and I talked about, this one is low-hanging fruit. We feel like Disney and Lucasfilm could flip a switch and make this into either a Disney Plus show or make it a trilogy of movies that could sell instantly. It's definitely changed my mind on it. And I think there are other books that I'll go back and read, but I think across the board, everyone I've ever talked to and everyone we've interacted with on Twitter has said that the Darth Bane trilogy is some of the best Star Wars out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially too, I think I was comparing it this last week to even like Dark Force Rising and stuff like that and previous books. What I think I love about this, and I think it's the reason why people like The Mandalorian so much, is that it takes this universe that we love, but expands it with new characters that I think Bane and Xana could stand on their own 2 feet. Like you said, low-hanging fruit. These are such good, rich characters that it doesn't try to expand or mess with the characters we already have pictures of, but instead it creates brand new ones that you go, man, these characters are great, and I love them, and I think I've never seen them, but in my mind's eye, I can see it, and I think they're great.
Well, if we can get Brent Dykman into reading these books and liking these books, I think anybody who's a Star Wars fan will want to check these out, because Brent is a visual non-reading guy, you know, when it comes to Star Wars, and he consumed these, and he said that they really, really brought him in. So again, I think Massengale's next on the list. We got to get him reading these, but me, you, Alfie, and Brent have all read these books now. And that's a pretty good group there that across the board loves this series. So let's jump into a little bit. Obviously, you know, we talked about already Path of Destruction from 2007. We had Rule of Two from 2008, and now we have Dynasty of Evil from 2009. Again, all from Drew Karpyshyn. And I think you brought it up in our first episode, or no, the second episode, talking about Rule of Two. These were churned out in months' time by Drew.
Yeah.
I mean, these were not, hey, you've got a few years to write these or to plan them out. It's not like this High Republic stuff going on where they've been planning since 2015 what they want to do with it. In 2006, they said, write the first one, came right back, said, write another one. And he threw this together, and to turn this around and have these great, rich characters and stories has been fabulous.
And to make it feel seamless, right? And we'll get into it when you read this book, but to bring back characters from the first book into the third book and how it all ties together, and it's this kind of masterful tapestry of characters. I just, again, you read it 10 years later and you go, wait, this was quick? Wait, you turned this around fast? Like, you don't see it that way.
No, and I think you hit on a key point there. There are characters in the first book that were great, rich characters that were never involved again in the second or third one. There were characters from the first book that wrap all the way around to the third book. There are characters in the third book who were not in the first or second book. Again, strong, rich characters that you think, my gosh, not only did he have the core, basically two characters for most of the storyline, Bane and Xana, but on top of that, each book had its own separate great characters, and then each book, you know, then there were tie-over characters for all three. So I think it's great. And being a light side guy, a Jedi kind of guy, to find that there were good, strong characters that were of the dark side, and then he sprinkled in some good Jedi characters that kept me interested in that side as well, across the board.
Right. No, I agree. Well, why don't we jump into it? Does that work?
So real quick, I like this because I think, you know, we'll bounce around a bunch of ideas, but in the paperback version, they did a really good couple line synopsis of this. And it says, 20 years have passed since Darth Bane, the reigning Dark Lord of the Sith, demolished the ancient order devoted to the dark side and reinvented it as a circle of two. One master to wield the power and pass on the wisdom, and one apprentice to learn, challenge, and ultimately usurp. I hate that word. I always mispronounce it. The Dark Lord.
You got it right. That was good.
And a duel to the death. So, you know, this stretches across from when Dez started in book one to now he's Darth Bane. He's taken in his apprentice, Darth Xana, who I think she went by Rain. Was that her nickname? Correct?
Yeah, that's right.
And now here it is 20 years later, where she's been with him for 20 years since he's come up with the rule of two. And the story is just very rich, very deep. I loved in the book how it started off with, you know, again, it brought in brand new characters. When you're bringing into this story, and I'll just throw it out there, they bring in a whole new Jedi who's you know, in a dispute on a planet looking for Sith artifacts. What was it? Jedi Knight Med Tandar. And yep. You're thinking, where are we going here? It's a whole new direction. And then he brings in another great character, the Itochi assassin, the Huntress. And that's how it starts off. And it really gets you really going with that storyline. And it, again, like you said, it weaves, I think you said it before we started, it weaves a tapestry. It just kind of goes from story to story back and forth throughout this whole thing. So some of your initial thoughts, or just start in on your
right
parts of Dynasty of Evil.
Well, what I love, and you mentioned it, was, you know, in Rule of Two, you get that great break where it's all of a sudden, you know, 10 years later, right? And you're like, whoa, a lot has transpired. This isn't the little kid Jedi that I knew.
Right.
And now in this third book, when it starts, it's another 10 years. And you just think of the development that's happened in between these books for these characters. I think that for me is why it adds some richness and some depth, right? When you go back and you watch A New Hope and, you know, 3 years have passed between A New Hope and Empire, you feel that in the characters when they're in there, because you go, man, some stuff has happened. I don't need to necessarily know what's happened, but I know that they've developed and become either more jaded, or they've become, you know, stronger in the Force, or something has happened with that. And I think you're right on to start with this story of this lone Jedi on the planet Doan. Yep. That's in there, you know, investigating and really going there too. You see a lot of, you know, Qui-Gon Jinn in this, right? At the very beginning of Phantom Menace, where they go in and they're negotiators and they're going to help, you know, bring peace between two groups of people that are fighting. And in the middle of this, he gets caught up in an assassination attempt by this Itochi assassin, which I came to love this character just because of how they talked about how, you know, she was Force sensitive, but she's not a Sith, and yet she's evil. And it reminded me very much of the kind of Asajj Ventress feel that we got in the Clone Wars, where it's, you know, it's this Force sensitive being, and yet she kind of is this gray in between. I thought the descriptions of that character were just, they were terrifying. So I liked it. I thought it was very cool.
No, I did too. And I think we found that since Revenge of the Sith came out, and you looked at the Clone Wars, and you look at some of the storylines we've done since then, whether it's the sequels, whether it's Rebels, you know, the whole Ahsoka storyline, the whole Asajj storyline, I find that Star Wars consistently blurs that line. That gray area has become more and more prevalent, to where when I was a kid, and I think even when you were a kid, it was good, evil, that's it. You were either Sith deals in absolutes, and a Jedi is always the moral compass and all these kind of things. But I think ever since then, the storylines have always been muddying the water, graying the area, you know, graying the line in between. So I really like how they keep doing it.
And did not take us too far off it, but I thought one of the best examples of that is in Rogue One, right? Where at the very beginning, you've got the Rebel Alliance, mm-hmm. who, you know, you got Cassian Andor shooting a dude in cold blood.
Right.
Right. Just because he's on the opposite side. And I think you're right on what I feel like we've seen with Star Wars over the past couple of years. We even got it in Last Jedi, which mm-hmm. T-Bob talked about. And but this idea of, you know, good is a certain point of view, and it, you know, whichever side you're on, I feel like Rebels dove into a ton of that as well too, yep. of, hey, you know, or even the latest episode of The Mandalorian, the first episode of season two, where, you know, the Empire is destroyed and people are celebrating, and then the slavers come in, and right. no, the Empire was actually keeping some evil out. I thought it was right on.
Nope, agree. So we have Xana and Bane. They're on Siutric 4, and they're going as Sep and Ala Omek. That's, you know, a pair of
brother and sister.
Yep. Merchant siblings, but they like to dabble in buying Sith artifacts, right? So over that 10-year period, obviously Bane, because of his injuries, because of the way he looks, you know, different things like that, he's kind of kept a low profile. He's used Xana as his person to go out into public, do his deeds, you know, and everything like that, but he still mingles some just locally. So I thought that was great. It gives that backstory of what they've been doing. I think it was also really cool to see that, you know, here's Bane who set up this rule of two. And right from the very beginning, you start seeing that he's kind of getting ticked off that Xana hasn't challenged him yet, right? Mm-hmm. She's not challenged him. He wants her to challenge him. I mean, look, I don't think anybody wants to die, but he knows this is the way it's got to be. And she's not. And he's really getting ticked because he knows he's losing power. He's getting older. His body's falling apart. And he thinks it'd almost be cheap on her side to try to beat him once he's so incapacitated that it's not worthy. And he thinks it'll weaken the whole Sith line, right? So I thought that was a really good storyline to start in with.
Well, and I think you bring up a great point. And I think this to me is, I think one of the biggest stretches for the rule of two to a degree is like, it's this fine dance between, mm-hmm. I want you to challenge me. And yet at the same point, I'm not going to, you know, on the flip side, Xana is going, I haven't learned everything that I need to learn yet to challenge you. And so keep teaching me. And I love this kind of back and forth that they play throughout this book, where he's mad at her for not challenging him. She's mad at him because he hasn't taught her everything yet. And this fine dance where you see it when you read this is that they are trying to figure out what the other person's doing yep. to no avail as they go throughout this book.
Well, I mean, it goes back to that, oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. They set up this plan, you know, to where, okay, we know this is how it's got to follow. But then as you get going into it, I'll be a little shady for you. You be a little shady for you. And it really brings up these things. And it shows you why it's been difficult to set this up, because let's face it, you have to find the perfect two people to really make this happen. So then, and then of course, really, you know, early on in the book, she finds out a little bit that he's kind of looking for other options of how maybe he can stay immortal. What are some things, there's some old Sith teachings and secrets that will keep him, you know, immortal and make it to where he doesn't need to replace himself or have her defeat him. So now she's getting ticked and it's making her change her ways. So again, they're both deceiving each other a little bit, but let's face it, when you're Sith, I guess that comes with the territory.
Right.
One of my favorite characters that jumps in next is Princess Serra. Princess Serra of Doan. We talked about it. The Jedi's on Doan. The assassin's on Doan. And we find out why that's all going on. Yes, there's the Sith artifacts, but the miners there have tried to assassinate. Well, they did assassinate Princess Serra's husband, who was the crown prince, right? And so she's been in deep, you know, despair since then. But it leads us back to, again, Drew's way of telling good stories. Serra is Kaleeb's daughter from all the way back in the first book, the healer.
It's crazy.
Right. That he said, Serra, get out. You need to go and hide and be a part of the universe away from me because Bane's going to come back. And here we are weaving her back into this story where she's depressed. You know, her husband's been killed. She's a princess now on this planet. and all of it intermingles back to where Bane's involved again. She's involved. I really thought that was a good storyline to follow from the beginning.
Totally. And how do you see it continue to weave, where it's not just one character, you know, from there, but that her bodyguard, right, yes, that is overseeing her is Lucia from the, what is it, the Nightwalkers or the Darkwalkers?
The Gloomwalkers.
That's it. Excuse me. The Gloomwalkers from the first book, who served underneath Dez at the time. And now she is no longer in the Sith army, but now she's kind of a bodyguard for hire.
Right.
Who was at one point treated by Sarah and has pledged her undying loyalty to her now. And again, you just see this perfect storm of, I remember the first time reading these books, and you read and you're like, wait a minute, I know that name. And then you go back to the other one, and then you put the pieces together and you're like, this is really cool. Huh? We're teeing up for some sort of ultimate showdown where all these people are going to see each other again in some capacity.
No, and I think you and I both agree. That scene where Dez in the first book basically pulled a mutiny on his leader of the Sith army, and Lucia watched it in amazement, couldn't believe what he could do compared to everybody else. To right. see her wrap back in like that was fabulous. And you know, when you're reading that first book and you're thinking, oh, that's interesting. There's somebody who's in awe of Dez, and you're not thinking, man, this is going to come back in book two or three. So yeah, she's great. And let's face it, this is where the rubber starts hitting the road, because Sarah's upset. The king, who was her husband's father, is upset because he's afraid now the Jedi's been killed there, that the Jedi are going to come down on him because he's the one who called the Jedi in. He's afraid the Jedi are going to think he's the one who called the assassination on that Jedi. And after the meeting, and when he says, please go talk, you know, go talk to the Jedi and tell him it wasn't me, Lucia pulls Sarah to the side and said, I knew how depressed and sad you were. I'm the one that called for the hit, right?
Right.
And it's like, so you see all these underneath pieces working together to where she's her right-hand person, but she's also the one who pulled off this scheme to have this person killed. So it's again, like you said, the weaving of this story is great. And so I just really loved all of that and how Drew put that together.
Right. I think it's so fun how, you know, you read in, I think this is why I love these characters so much, is you see this fight even between Sarah throughout the entire book.
Yep.
You know, they mentioned very briefly that she is force sensitive when she goes to the Jedi Temple, which we'll get to, but I love her, you know, fight back and forth between, you know, there's some sort of darkness that's pulling at her.
Yep.
And so even when Lucia says, hey, I hired this Tochi assassin to take out, you know, all these people, and he killed the Jedi as well too, she's upset about that because she's like, well, why did you do that? Like, you know, kind of thing. And I just think it's cool to see the back and forth.
I agree. So again, a little bit more of the backstory. Again, that back and forth going on between Bane and Xana. Bane hears about that Jedi being killed on Doan.
Right.
He thinks, I can't leave where I am to go search for this collector of artifacts that might have this immortality thing that I'm looking for. And what was it? Darth?
And Dedu.
There we go. I can't go look for that while she's here, because she'll know something's up, right? Because I haven't left.
Right.
I'm not leaving. So he says, go find out who that assassin was on that Jedi. Maybe they'll be able to help us, or maybe there's some powers we can get from them. She's a little leery of it, but she says, okay, you know, I'll follow along. I'll go check this out. He then zooms off and sneaks to go find that Darth and Dedu information. So again, they're playing each other back and forth. But like you said, meanwhile, while that's going on, while Xana's going to look for that person, Sarah and Lucia are on their way to Coruscant, and they meet Jedi Master Oba, who I thought was a great character.
I knew you would love that character. I just knew it. When I read it again, I was like, man, Joe's going to love
this. I did.
Council member, very wise and stoic.
And that's just it. I mean, here's an Ithorian Jedi Master. Again, I love the way they speak, and I can't remember if he was using the modulator that we see in Rebels,
right,
or what, but it's been a while since I've read the book, but he went so deep into the Jedi lore and history and talked to her and tried to pull things out of her because he was concerned that the king maybe called for that assassination. She talked him into it, but while she was there, he shows her, well, one, he says that there's a dark Jedi named Set Hearth who comes back later on in this, who may have been involved with that assassination stuff going on, who was his former apprentice, I believe. And then two, he shows her some of my favorite characters, like a memorial for them. Master Valentine Farfalla, Johan, that lost to Bane, and who really injured Bane in Rule of Two.
Oh, Tython.
Yes, and also right there, the healer Khalid, her father, has a memorial right there at the Jedi temple. Area. And so I think that really stood out, and it stuck with her, and it really hit her deep down inside to think that her father had, was a Jedi, had the Jedi healing powers, and to see him being memorialized there. But correct me if I'm wrong, she then goes right to Lucia and says, I need to find out, because she saw those memorials, who did this, who the assassin was. Because she felt, in honor of her father, she wanted to figure out what was going on and what happened, because she felt it would lead to Bane, correct?
Right. Well, and what's so interesting about it is that, as this was my only critique of this book, right? And I thought it was the fact that they've built a monument, not to the Jedi, but the fact that Khalid was included in this monument, mm-hmm. This non-Jedi, member who was included in this, to me, it felt like a tad stretch. Again, I'm Drew, if you're listening to this, awesome. If you're listening to it, I'm not bashing you. This is better than anything I could have come up with. At the same point, I was a little like, hang on a second. It back in the realm of, this seems too coincidental,
yeah.
Right? To go, man, okay, we've got a statue for some healer that's not a Jedi, kind of thing. But it's true. And what I love is the writing that takes place within Sarah when she sees it, of almost instantly recognizing, this is my father. And it says even on the plaque, the healer, Khalid, right? And she's like, man, I know exactly who that is. And she goes to Lucia and she says, Lucia, we need to figure out, we need to get that Itochi assassin back and find her. Because you're right, she does think it's going to lead towards Bane, but she's very private and held off about it and doesn't come straight out and go, and here's why. It's just, I need you to set up another meeting and make this happen. And I love that you bring up said Hearth too, because I thought it was so cool. We've joked about it a little bit with Dooku being, one of the lost Jedi.
Yep.
Here's another one that's introduced as well as someone who was a Jedi and yet fell away from it and really has been kind of chapped by this. I think I read it somewhere that said that, but like chapped by this.
He didn't like the master and apprentice setup. He didn't like having to follow the rules.
I don't want to be a part of that.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, and I like that introduction, that character, which I think is where it leads us to next.
Yeah, you're right, because they did. Who was it? The Lucia, right? Didn't Lucia go track him down on Nalhutta, I believe? I have to look at my notes.
So
on Dohn. He's on Dohn. Yeah.
He's on Dohn, and Xana finds him.
That's right, Xana. Because
he goes to go, and they have the Rodian barkeeper who they – interview and kind of go throughout there, but she meets him on Dohn.
Yep.
And that's where they have this really cool battle back and forth. I thought was awesome, and she can tell that he's force sensitive, but he's not actually a Jedi, and we see more of this Sith sorcery stuff that she uses, where essentially to a lesser being it would have killed him, similar to what we've seen in other books, but to him it put him into a coma for a couple days.
No, right. And she said, if he can come out of this, then he might be a worthy apprentice. That's right. That's what it was. So, yeah, I confuse, for some reason, Lucia and Xana. You are
correct. There's a lot going on in this book. It jumps all over the place.
Honestly, it's a fast read. It's a fast listen because of how much is going on, right? I mean, that's the thing, is you can't stop because you're like, well, wait a minute. This just happened. I need to find out, okay, now what's going on over there? Because while we're talking about this, at the same time, Bane's going off to Prakith, I believe. He's going off to Prakith to find the Darth Endedu temple and his holocron and things about immortality. And while he's there, of course, typical Darth Bane stuff, there's these cultists who still follow Endedu, and he just wipes them all out, destroys them. And so he gets the holocron that he wants, and let's go from there. So,
I love about, and they did it a little bit in the second book, but they do it in this one, is explaining that the Sith, kind of origin of the Jedi planets exist, but they exist in the deep core, which is really unstable to fly to. And I just love that they went into all the details of how, he's got to take 100 small little hyperspace jumps.
Yes.
Because of the unstable. I just, again, it's adding to this galaxy that we already know and we love. And I love that in episode two, we go out to the far reaches in Camino, you know, which is way far out there. In these books, you're getting into this inner, you know, hot soup of the galaxy that is constantly in motion and constantly moving. And these planets that are literally forgotten about because they're so impossible to get to. And this is the one where the cultists live. And I agree. I thought the writing was so figurative. It just, it paints a great picture for you of these planets.
Agree. So I'll be the back and forth here because it's cracking me up, because we just talked about Bane going to Prakith, doing the cultists, getting to the temple, getting the holocron. Flip it to the other part of the universe. Lucia has gone to a space station called Paradise, meets up with that Itochi assassin again, the Huntress, and gives her higher than the assassin's rate and says, hey, I need you to return. I need you to take care of this now. Go to Caleb's camp on Ambria. Caleb, sorry, I keep calling him Caleb. Caleb's camp on Ambria, gives her triple the rate, and she agrees. Lucia goes back to Doan. So you've got Lucia meeting with the assassin, heading back to Doan to meet up with Sarah. You've got Bane going off to Prakith to get the holocron. You've got Xana going off to meet Harth on Doan and then to now Hutta. So, I mean, literally, you could almost set down a game board and have pieces moving around like a checkers or a chess set, because that's how much they're moving around in this book. I know we kind of joked a little bit about how fast-paced the Rise of Skywalker the Rise of Skywalker was, but it kind of feels like that fast paced motion in this book, right?
It does. And you're bouncing, I mean, just from place to place. And I will say this, the second half of this book flies.
It does.
I mean, when you get into it, by the time you get to these people all kind of going in different spots. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong in this, but when Sarah is at the Jedi Temple and she's standing there and she sees this, she asks, the Ithorian Jedi Master, I can't remember his name, you had it just a second ago, asked him, and he says, hey, what was the Sith like that they killed on Ambria? And he explains to him, well, he was this, you know, scrawny little skinny boy with half an arm, you know, kind of thing. And Sarah immediately is drawn back and goes, that's not true. Like, they killed the wrong guy.
Right.
They didn't know that it was him. My father died at the hand of a Sith, and the Sith is still alive somewhere out there. And he was shaved head, and he was big and tall and bulky. And so sending the Huntress to the camp on Ambria,
to meet
they
Sarah.
Use
right.
Yeah, and they use the Huntress's ability to sense things through the Force to almost get pictures, which, again, this was before this actually was a thing yet. But when you play Fallen Order, right, when you see a little bit of it in Force Awakens, this I'm going to say it wrong, but this psychometry or whatever they call this Jedi ability to touch things and to feel things through the Force.
Yes.
You see this almost without getting the name of it, where the Huntress is able to see pictures of here's what happened in this place and all the events that led up to this point. And yeah, I see a tall hulking figure, you know, hiding under the floorboards of this hut.
Right.
Disguised in the Force.
So you're right. So the Huntress is using her abilities. She gets images of Caleb, of Bane, of Xana. She meets up with Sarah there. Sarah offers her even a higher thing of you know, what you pay a mercenary. And the Huntress accepts. Sarah gives her a drug called Synflax, which will incapacitate Bane. And she says, okay, I'll go track down Darth Bane for you. So, you know, Bane's traveling back from Prakith, going back to Sciotric 4. Sarah has now left her off of Ambria and is heading back to Doan. The moving pieces are going crazy. I really, really enjoyed the part where the Huntress actually traps Bane. I thought that was fabulous. It was well done in the book. You know, she had hired gun assassins, mercenaries to help. He was cutting through them left and right. She knew what she could do with her force sensitivity, and she knew he was weakening. So she knew all the little things to play, and then to be able to hit him with that drug that finally starts slowing in and kicking and incapacitates him. Again, I thought it was really well done, because here's a guy who we almost see as being now immortal, even though he's shooting for that. You know, all the things he's done in these three books, I mean, you're like, how can this guy still be surviving? But
right.
Finally incapacitates him and is able to take him down and you know, package him up, take his lightsaber, take his, you know, all his belongings, some of the Sith artifacts, and take them as well. But what did you think about that, where she actually gets Bane?
Well, and let me tell you, if you've not read the book and you're listening to this right now, it sounds a lot easier than it actually is.
Yes.
To capture Bane. And what I love about it is when she says, "So you want me to kill Darth Bane?" And Sarah says to the Huntress, "No, I want you to capture him." She almost laughs at her and goes, "Yeah, there's no way. Like, there's no way that, like, even an incapacitated Sith physically could kill me with his mind." Right. And so she gives him the drug, and even the, you know, the surprise elements that they go to, where Bane walks back into this mansion of a house and all of a sudden these explosions start going off. Right. And they're dropping, they're shooting at him from all these places. And you're right. I mean, he cuts through these assassins like it's nothing. And her one way of really incapacitating him is she has laced her blade
right
with this Synflax, slices him, and then still has to fight him off for a minute until it actually takes effects and comes into it. I thought it played such a – I think it would have been really easy to write it where, you know, the assassins come in and they pin him down, you know, or, which they do pin him down to a degree, right. But they try to get it, and, you know, it goes easier than that. But I love this. Man, this is our one shot, and if we get this wrong, we are all going to die, and we're going to die quickly.
So more back and forth. That's a great scene. That's going on. Right before that, leading into it, is Xana finally talking Sed Harth into becoming her apprentice. Again, we talked about how he doesn't like the Jedi way of master and apprentice. He doesn't like to be tied down. He wants to be, you know, his own person, doing his own thing. He likes the lifestyle he's created. But then he sees she might be able to give him that power that he's been wanting, to where he can be his own person, do his own thing, and have great power. And he flips the switch and says, you know, fine, I'll follow you. I'll be your apprentice. He's like, I might be able to get out of this what I want. He's a very selfish individual. And so while that's going on, the attack on Bane's going on. And then, if I'm not mistaken, they show up right after that, right? Because don't they find the house? They find the mansion, to where she knows something's wrong, because the damage, he's not there.
It's blown to hell.
It's all that. So she knows something's going on. But at the same time, if I'm not mistaken, Sed Harth is the one who finds the stuff saying, hey, this guy was looking – I studied as a Jedi this immortality thing by Darth Andedu. He's looking for that, which really ticks her off, because she now knows I have to kill him, because he doesn't believe in me. He doesn't trust me. He doesn't think I can replace him. So now she's at another level of anger, and she's ready to go after him then, finally.
Right. Well, and I thought that what I was struck by this last time reading it through was there's similarities between, in the second book, when you read about Hetton, right? The guy that, you know, comes in and kind of, I think I spoke about him. He's the Richie Rich of the Star Wars
universe.
That's
right. The rich kid.
And you look at that, and then you look at Sed Harth, and you see the comparisons between the two of them, almost where, you know, they talk about how he enjoys the finer things, and he's very much in this for his own power. Very, very actually opposite of kind of Bane's approach, which is, you know, wealth is to a means.
Yep.
You know, we kind of, wealth is a tool that we use to ultimately gain more power. But what I did, and again, maybe this falls under the realm of coincidence again, but you're absolutely right. Xana is upset, you know, when she shows up and she sees that, because she's taking Sed Harth with him to go kill Bane. Right. And essentially say, like, hey, I'm going to kill Bane, but you're going to be here and you're going to be my apprentice once I kill him. And she casually mentions to him and goes, yeah, unless you can tell me something about Darth Andedu. And like, she mentions that name almost flippantly, and Sed Harth like stops in his tracks, and he's like, yo, this guy is chasing down immortality. And you're right. It makes her really mad, and it makes her go, man, like, he doesn't believe in me. He doesn't think I'm strong enough. And I, again, back to the thing we talked about at the beginning, it's both of them trying to get inside the minds of each other. The amount of time they're actually together in this book is very small.
It is.
And yet they're both analyzing what the other person's doing from afar. And I thought that was a very cool way of telling the story.
One thing that I left out, and I could use your help on this. So one of the things that did help the Huntress be able to take Bane down is his whole trip back from Prakith. He was trying to crack and get into that holocron of Andedu, but there was a gatekeeper on it that would not work with him, would not let him learn about the transfer of his essence to become immortal. So fill me in on that again, because I know it's been a while since I've read it. But so that also weakened his mind. Like, he had spent so much time and effort on it, right? To where he was kind of distracted to go along with all the other things going on by the assassin or by the huntress. That was also in his mind that really didn't get him focused, to where he didn't pay attention to that.
Right. Well, and I think this is the master writing of Drew, where most of the second book is Bane trying to create his own holocron, right? So you understand the mental toll that it takes to create one of these things. And then you learn more about the gatekeeper, which is essentially just, if you haven't read the book, gatekeeper is a, it's a holographic image of the person who's making it. It's almost kind of the best way I can describe it is like artificial intelligent, being that sits at the front of this holocron that, unless it wants to, it won't let you in to learn this stuff. And I think this speaks to the power of Bane. You talked about, him being this kind of immortal or trying to become this immortal being. The gatekeeper on the flight back from Prakath keeps saying, I'm not going to teach you this. You're not ready, kind of thing. Right. And Bane finally just asserts his will on this holocron and rips it open from the inside, essentially. And he's like, I'm going to find it. But the amount of energy that he expounds upon this thing to find the secret of essence transfer, he finally figures it out.
Right.
But you're right. He comes in a little bit weakened before the Huntress gets to him.
So I will say this, part of this next part of the book is some of my favorite part. When the Huntress brings Bane back to Sarah and Lucia at the stone prison on Doane, and you can visualize they're hundreds of meters underground under a castle in something that hasn't been used for centuries because it was a torture place. It was the way that the king of that planet kept his power, as any of his people that dissented, they were put in there, right? So they have him trapped deep down in this tower under the castle, and they're using these drugs, these stimulants to wake him up, these sedatives to put him back under. And you got to think how powerful that has to be, because this guy, again, he's almost all powerful. And to see that Sarah wants to see Bane, Lucia says, well, if you're going in, I want to see what's going on. But then the Huntress says, well, I'm the one who brought him here, so I want to see this as well. So they go in, and Sarah reveals to him, wakes him up and lets him know, I'm Khalib's daughter. And he's basically saying, you're screwing this up. You're going down the wrong path here. This is my
I didn't kill him.
That's right. No, I didn't kill him. Right. And so she's frustrated, but when Lucia sees who it is, that was masterpiece writing, to see Lucia sitting there. The Huntress just wants to take it all in because she's inquisitive about the dark side now. She knows she's got the Force power. She's thinking, what can I learn? What can I see from this? How are they trapping this guy, keeping him trapped? But Lucia sees that it was Dez, and she cannot – I can't remember if it was because she's like, look, I think it was a mixture. She didn't want Sarah to go down this path. And at the same time, she didn't want him killed because of the man he was and the person she looked up to. So she gives him a stimulant that gets him out of there, or
wakes him up. Right. Yep. And she knows once he wakes up, he'll be able to bust out of this place.
Correct. Did you find that whole area of the underground and there were so many scenes where you could just feel, like, I felt like I could envision that it's like an old castle from the old knights day, knights and dragons and all that. But I just really love that scene. I really love the intensity that was brought by Sarah, by Lucia, by the Huntress, by Bane, all underground in that thing. I thought it was just great, great writing. And I thought it was well done.
Well, and you touched on it. We said it earlier, the idea of, when all these characters are introduced in their different storylines, how they're going, it's building up to one moment where all these stories are going to cross paths.
Right.
And so you already have the anticipation of that. But what I love about this scene is the amount of themes that are going on within it. Right. And so Sarah's, fighting for vengeance and going, I'm going to kill the guy that killed my dad. Right. Which kind of spits in the face of exactly what Khaled believed. Right. You've got Lucia who's going, man, I owe it to this guy to free him. And at the same point, I owe it to Sarah to not let her go down this path. Like what I saw the other Sith who, led us, how they went. You got the Huntress who's in it going, man, how do I get what I can out of this situation. And really, you know, you're right. I'm not a Sith, but how do I do that? So that those are just the themes in the one room that are going on. And if I'm getting ahead of myself, I'll stop.
No, you're fine.
But again, while that's happening,
Xana and Hearth.
Xana and Hearth show up on Doan and land near the stone prison, get into the stone prison, and now Xana's going, I got to find my master, and I got to kill him. Because he knows, like, I got to kill him. I got to kill him, and I got to, you know, train up Hearth to be this new Sith. And I can't start that process until my master is dead. And so she embarks into the stone prison, leaves Hearth on the ship, kind of like very, you know, stay with the ship, boy, you know, kind of thing. And right. That makes him upset, you know, and goes in to go find her master.
So you talk about some things that could be, that would be beautiful visually for Brent Dykeman to listen, to watch. This prison scene, not only the stuff we talk about where he's drugged and all that's going on, but once he gets out and once he starts unleashing ungodly power on all these guards, on all this area, and he's also using his force presence and leaving marks to where Xana will go in the wrong direction, all that's going on at one time. And at the same time, we talked about that selfish guy, Sad Hearth. He's like, I'm not sticking around here. This is not what I signed up for. He can sense that Bane and Xana are going after each other. He can also sense that holocron, that Andedu's holocron. And he's, you know, he's been a thief. He's been a Jedi. He's been a little dark. He goes and tracks that down while they're chasing each other through the cavernous hallways of this prison. He's not worried about that. He's like, let them go fight. Let them go kill themselves. I'm going to get mine while I can get mine.
Right.
So again, we've got all this intermingling because while he's doing that, good old Huntress, she knows what's going on. She goes right. And tells Sarah, hey, Lucia's the one to let him out, right? Because Sarah's getting ready to shut down the whole prison. She's ready to have it.
It's built to explode. Like, correct. If they needed to, they could cave the whole thing in on itself. Again, great imagery.
Yeah, exactly. So she knows the codes. She's getting ready to do that, so everybody in there is going to die. She doesn't care because it'll take Bane out and whoever else is in there. And here comes the Huntress saying, hey, Lucia is the one who did this. She's the one who let him out. So now she's changing her mind on this, wants to go back and look for Lucia to help her and get her out of there because she's frustrated, but she's still her great friend. And here's Hearth sneaking off, getting holocron. Here's the Huntress saying, feel like something's going on. She goes up with the ships. A great interaction between those two. And I feel like you got four ships up there, and Was it Hearth who destroyed two of them? And was like, look, I'm leaving us no options. You know, I'm going to take one. You take one. Let's get out of here.
Yep.
And he finagles his way to get out of there with that holocron. But, you know, the Huntress knows she needs a ship. And all this time, Bane has no lightsaber. And he's still fighting Xana in the caves or in the paths of that prison.
Well, and this Joe, to me, was like the ode to Darth Bane. When you read all these books, right, and you see this one moment where he's breaking out of this prison, it reminded me of, I think it's the second to last episode of the Clone Wars, right, where Maul escapes on Star Destroyer, and he's, you know, he's slicing people in half with doors, you know, and he's taking out all these clone troops without a lightsaber,
right,
but really it puts on display his power in the dark side, and then Xana shows up exactly what you're talking about. And she has her lightsaber, and yet he's able to fight off enough, like to fight her off while she's swinging the lightsaber at him. And I just thought it was such a cool, you said the thing about visually, there are some things in these books that I don't feel like we really have a box for. Like we can imagine it, but we haven't seen anything like it. And it was crazy how quick I was drawn back to the end of Clone Wars where Maul, you know, just like casually strutting down this hallway, just dispatching clone troopers all over the place. Goes into this, you know, hyperdrive room and just brings the whole thing down on itself. And I sat and I went, okay, now I have a little bit better box for just the sheer power of Bane, who is more powerful than Maul, in my opinion, but he's walking through and, you know, destroying all this stuff. I thought it was excellent, especially how the fight between Xana and Bane ends with another stalemate. Right. And these tons and tons of rocks, you know, start falling through. And it separates the two of them. And Xana now realizes, I failed to kill Bane. if he's out here, he's going to find me and he's going to kill me. And I think they said something in this, and I may be getting my lightsaber fights mixed up, but they said something like, Xana realized in this moment that Bane has never dueled me.
Yes.
With his full strength or with his full speed before. And now he's bringing this. I think it might be off.
But you're right. You're 100% right. Yeah. And one little scene that I really liked in there, during the collapse and during the problems and during the escape, was Lucia actually runs into Bane, and she tries to tell him, "Hey, this is wrong. Don't go after Sarah. Leave Sarah. Take me down. Whatever you need to do. Sarah's a good person. Don't go after her. All this." And here comes Xana and is like, the heck with you. And boom, she's trying to take out Bane. That's where you said the rocks fell. She's trying to take out Bane, but he escapes and she takes out Lucia with that as, you know, instead. So Lucia is now dead at the hands of Xana, you know, and all she was really trying to do was keep Bane from going after Sarah. So I thought that was really good. And then of course, Sarah sneaks away, finds the body of Lucia, and takes her with her. But so basically, you know, while that whole thing's crumbling, Xana gets away, Bane gets away, Sed Harth gets away, Sarah gets away, but takes the dead body of Lucia with her, right?
Right.
And if I'm not mistaken, let's see, Bane takes off with.
Well, and so Bane stumbles into the hangar where the Huntress is, and the Huntress has grabbed his lightsaber. And she gives the lightsaber back to him and essentially says, "Hey, I hear you're in need of a new apprentice.
Yep.
I could be your apprentice. You know, teach me everything you can." And Bane is impressed by her. And so she now, I'm going to get the name wrong, but he essentially renames her in this moment to Darth Cognis.
Cognis, yeah.
Yeah. So she goes from being the Huntress to this really scary Darth Cognis.
I loved it because, I mean, what you're seeing in this is everybody's playing each other. I mean, there's not one character doesn't have a clean slate behind them. Not one character hasn't flipped from good to bad, from dark to light. And, you know, and you're somebody else in this whole story. I don't care. I mean, from Bane to Xana to the Huntress to Lucia to Sarah to Sed Harth, all of them have done something to either backstab or go against what they should. You know, it's crazy how all those have flipped. And like we said, this is the rise of Skywalker. This is the rise of Skywalker on steroids, on speed-wise. I mean, it really is.
No, it flies. And I think you see it in a very short amount of time in this prison. And then all of a sudden, they're back going their separate ways. And you're like, wait a minute. How are they going to end this thing? Like, how do you end this with now you've got all these people going in the different ways? And I don't want to spoil it, but I love how we get from this prison back to Ambria.
Yeah, refresh me. I'm trying to. I know it happens. They all get back to Ambria, but so Bane leaves with the Huntress now, Darth Cognis, right?
Yep.
Xana's off on her own because Sed Harth has taken off with the holocron.
Yep.
So Sarah leaves, goes back to Ambria, back to Caleb's place with the body of Lucia, and buries the body of Lucia there at his camp.
Yep. And Bane is out in space now with Cognis, and both Bane and Xana know the same thing. I've got to kill this other person before they kill me.
Correct.
And so Bane sends out a transmission to Xana's ship and essentially says, meet me at Caleb's camp on Ambria and come there and come meet me there. And so Xana goes, I got to go kill him as well. And so Xana takes off towards there, but Bane and Cognis get there first. And that's where they run into Sarah, who is burying Lucia.
Yep. And basically, he says, look, I didn't kill your dad. I'm not going to kill you because you probably have, you know, you probably have these same healing powers. You might come in handy again. And you know, let's call it a truce. Let's go. Let's not do it. She refuses. And for one way for Darth Cognis to earn her stripes, she kills her right there, correct?
She kills her. And I thought this was so interesting. You know, you always think of stories where, you know, it's like if I go to the what if Sarah had not gone down this path, right? Mm-hmm. If she had just said, and I think this is it's almost like a narrative on the dark side, right? Like if she had not gone down the path of revenge, you know, it's the Yoda, fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate, hate leads to suffering, right? Kind of thing where if she hadn't got the Itochi back into this, you know, the Huntress would not have become Cognos. Cognos would have not killed her. And so I love in this moment, it's this almost acceptance of I've created this. Right. And now I have to pay the ultimate price because of the events that I put into motion falling to the dark side.
It says she doesn't even resist. When Darth Cognos goes to kill her, she's just like, she's resigned to say, hey, I've kind of set this in motion on my side. I could have not had the anger, the vengeance, the revenge factor. I could have stepped away from all that. And, you know, I'm a princess. Could have led a pretty good life and not have to worry about all that stuff. But I mean, let's face it. We're coming down to the battle royale. You've got Xana showing up on Ambria. You've got Cognos sitting there and basically saying to her when she runs into her, I'm not on either one of you side. Whoever wins, I want to be the apprentice to whoever.
Pretty
wins.
Good spot to be.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's sat back. She's like, hey, I'm not going to get involved. You and Bane fight this out, and I'm going to go follow whichever one of you wins this thing. So great position, great character. She's, again, playing both sides. And Bane knows he's got to, like you said, he's never used all of his powers against Xana before. But then again, I think Xana mentions she's never shown him all of her defense battles before.
Right.
So you've got a really well done, man, talk about seeing this visually, a really well done battle between these two. She's trying to use the force imagery that she can and put into his mind with the tentacles coming around him and everything. I'll let you run with this, but I mean, there's just some great things here in this battle.
And I think there's so many things that lead to this moment that almost feel like throwaway lines that all come full circle. So earlier in this book, there's a couple things. So one of them being, we find out the backstory on Ambria and how Ambria, you know, was this planet that was naturally strong in the Force, and a dark Sith came and tried to essentially suck the life out of the planet, you know, kind of polluted it. And then this one Jedi comes and traps his essence in this lake right next to the camp. And so the planet's already steeped in the dark side, right?
Correct.
You learn that Bane's essence transfer of creating immortality, essentially, he's got one shot at this.
Yep.
And if he doesn't get it right, he's dead. And his soul is essentially in this purgatory, you know, kind of place where it's kind of like a thought bomb.
That's exactly what I was going to say. The thought bomb. He notices that at the end of one, beginning of the second book, where all those souls are trapped in that thought bomb. And he's like, I could face that, you know, and he knows that if he doesn't pull this off, he's facing the same eternity.
And so they get into this fight. And again, you just got to go read it if you haven't read it yet. You can picture it so vividly where he's pulling out force lightning, you know, and they're swinging lightsabers all over the place. And then at some point, you're exactly right. Xana brings about this Sith sorcery of these tentacles out of the planet that grab him and start sucking the life out of him. And this whole confrontation, and Joe, if I miss anything, jump in and help me here with this, but leads to this moment essentially where Bane is being beaten. He gets a hand cut off.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And he's sitting there and he reaches.
I think it was his left arm. Wasn't that right? The left forearm.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And he reaches out and he grabs Xana and tries to start this process of the essence transfer, which, you know, all the explanations we've gotten up to this point are, you know, it's safer for him to create a clone, which you talk about, you know, Rise of Skywalker and where we go and, you know, essence transfer of essentially what Palpatine does, right?
Correct.
When Palpatine gets killed, he transfers his consciousness into another clone. But Bane realizes he doesn't have the time, so he has to find someone that's younger or, you know, less powerful on the dark side. And so he grabs her, starts this process. And this is where we get left with this. And this is the spoiler alert for the whole book, right? But we get left with this moment where, you know, it's this explosion of energy almost. And at the very end, you know, Bane is gone. Xana stands up and Cognos is left with this moment. It's written from the perspective of Cognos, but it's left in this moment of, wait a minute, did it work? Is that Xana? Is that Bane in Xana's body? Because when Xana stands up, she's got a tremor in her hand, very similar to how Bane had the tremor in his hand.
We didn't even speak about that because it was such a, when you're reading it, you think of it's a small thing, right? That his left hand just keeps twitching a little bit. He has to keep, squeezing into a fist and letting go and things like that. And you're thinking, oh, okay, that's an interesting little side note there. But it becomes so evident because she's doing that when she's up and walking away. And that's where Cognis is looking, going, wait a minute. That's what Bane was doing. You know, he was
right.
He had the trimmer in the left hand. He would make a fist and open it up. And so you're right. I mean, here we've got Cognis not knowing. We've got Xana standing up. She's not sure if it's Bane in there, Xana in there. As far as when I left it, I was kind of torn, and I thought to myself, okay, maybe it's Xana with just a touch, with just maybe some of the powers of Bane or something like that in there to where that was happening. But I think you're going to point out later here in a minute some things you've read since then. So basically, Xana says, "Hey, Cognis, come on, you're going to be my apprentice." That is the Dynasty of Evil that's leaving, right? And then a little throwaway at the end, they go and they don't finish the book with Cognis and Xana, but Drew finishes it going back to Sed Hearth, out. I think he's out in the ship somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. And he's trying to open up the holocron, eager to learn about the ritual of essence transfer. So
right.
You leave the end of this trilogy. Okay, we're focused on Cognis and Xana. But then, boom, that one little bit at the end shows you another side avenue we can go on, that there's still that Sed Hearth, that dark Jedi who was thinking about becoming a Sith apprentice, who's now looking at that same holocron that Bane looked at, you know, and learned this. So I think that was really good. Another, it's just one of those side things to where you could have said, okay, are we going to have a fourth book? And is Cognis and Xana going to meet up and fight against Sed Hearth, who's now learning these things? I mean, I love knowing everything, but at the same time, sometimes it's good not to know certain things.
Yep. I love it because you're still 980 years
yep.
from the Battle of Yavin, right? And so right. you go, man, I think this to me, when I read back through the final time, it was, you know, this is your, you know, Darksaber coming out of the TIE fighter in the Mandalorian moment, where you're like,
right,
wait a minute, what? Like, there's another Sith that could now challenge Xana, and how does that, like, because your mind is going, I know the events that are going to transpire in the future.
Right.
It's connecting the puzzle pieces of how you got there and where you go. I'm with you. When I read this book the first time, and I heard, and you read the part about, you know, the twitch in the hand,
mm-hmm.
I was almost convinced that Bane had, because I wasn't very impressed with Xana, you know, the first time I read this book, I thought Bane, again, back to the Bane breaking into the prison, in my mind, Bane was the end-all, be-all
yep.
Sith. And so I had this moment where I was like, man, like, it's definitely Bane. And Bane is, and I like twists, you know, I like stuff you didn't really see coming, happening. And I would even say this, fast forward to Rise of Skywalker, it was solidified for me a little bit more sitting in the theater. And the Emperor has this one line right before the big confrontation where he says, I am the Sith, right? Like, I am,
right.
And kind of the same, I am all of the Sith, right? Like, similar to how Rey goes, you know, I am all of the Jedi. And I sat there in the theater and I watched that and I went, hang on a second. Could it be that this essence transfer has just continued down the line and somehow Bane is a part of Palpatine and something like that? And again, my mind starts spinning right. at all these theories. And then as I was getting ready for this show, I stumbled across it on the internet, but there were a lot of people like you and me that had questions of, man, did Xana win? Did Bane transfer into Xana? What is this, you know, kind of thing. And Drew actually wrote a small little article on his website after this in response to all this. And he didn't mock fans, but he just goes, guys, I thought I was pretty clear about how this ended. And everybody left and they were like, what do you mean you were pretty clear about how this ended? And his explanation for this, again, this can be headcanon for you or not, but his explanation was Xana won and Bane was imprinted on her. And so she was somehow disabled similarly to Bane because he tried the essence transfer. But essentially, he writes it and he says this was perfect way for Bane to go out, because if Xana had not been strong enough, Bane would have continued. But in his mind, you know, Bane, this was a very fitting ending to Bane, where he was vanquished by his apprentice who was stronger than he was. And that's the whole thing behind the rule of two and how you right. continue and where you go. So it's very fitting. And for me, it was a little like the air got let out of the balloon to a degree of kind of going like, man, I would have rather just not known. If Drew had just gone, well, what do you guys think? What do you know? I'd be like, well, I don't know. What if, what if, what if? But to get a definitive ending like that, he even said in the article, he's like, I'm a very forward writer, mm-hmm. and I don't like to leave people with twists, and we're in a twist culture today. And he actually, in the thing, he says, I blame M. Night Shyamalan for all the twists. And I thought it was great. But yeah, that was his take on his ending, I guess. I like the other one better.
Yeah, I mean, you hit on it earlier. First of all, I love that he did that. I mean, it's okay. I mean, you said it can be our own headcanon. I'm fine with that. Until they make this actual canon, we can all play around with it and do what we want with it. But I did not see in this entire trilogy, I did not see many, if any, flaws. I think you pointed out one that, not a flaw, but just something, you know, like you said, Khalib, why is he in there? Maybe, you know, the Force does have an interesting way of playing with things, right? I mean, maybe that was meant to be. Maybe they felt honor enough to put him in there because he wasn't a Jedi. But other than that, I mean, every character I liked, the storylines I liked. I didn't feel like there was anything to where you're like, oh, come on, really? We're going down that right. path? There was none of that in there at all. This guy was given the free rein to make a story about something not related to anything except maybe 1,000 years later it attaches itself to Darth Sidious, right? But I think it served its purpose. I think that the more people that want to take in this trilogy, the better, because you know, they get that hashtag make Solo 2 happen, right?
Right.
I would love to have a hashtag start make Darth Bane canon, right? Because I mean, I know he is from the Clone Wars, but it was a small 10-second thing, right? So but maybe make the Darth Bane trilogy, you know, whatever. I mean, it's
right.
It's that good. It's as good as most of the movies. It's as good as Clone Wars and Rebels. It's that good. And I applaud, you and I both have jumped onto the Drew Karpyshyn bandwagon. We both look and say, man, give him some more things to write, because these are good stories. And so I don't know. I appreciate you wanting to go through this with me, because you were the one that said, hey, Joe, you like the books, you should go read these. And fortunately, I was able to take the audiobooks and zoom through them like Brent did. And I did zoom through them because they were just that good of stories. So any closing thoughts or any ideas you want to leave with this?
Well, yeah, I know we're running out of time. I'm curious for you, after reading all three of these books, is there one that jumps out to you as your favorite, or a favorite part, or a favorite character? I'm just curious. I like to stack them sometimes and go, of the three showings, which was my favorite? I'm curious what you think.
You know, I would say, I think I liked the second one the best. I liked, even though it was creepy and weird, I liked the Orbalisk aspect of it. I liked the battle between those six or seven Jedi and Bane. And I liked the storyline where, what was her cousin's name again?
Derivit.
Derivit. I liked him being brought back into it. I liked that the second story started off with him training her as a young kid and then broke off to 10 years later, what it was like from there. And I for some reason, I'm attached to Farfalla and Johan. I really like both of those Jedi. So I think those two really got a good play in the second book. Not as much Jedi in this book, which you couldn't fit any Jedi really into this storyline. So that one stands out, but honestly, there's not a one of them that's a bad book at all.
Right.
What about you?
I agree. Second's my favorite. And I think when it boils down to it, the first one, you're coming to love some characters, but you don't love them yet. You don't know why. Third book, honestly, I really enjoyed it. It felt like infighting, which to me was, it's not that it wasn't interesting, but I love the Jedi versus Sith. I will always be Jedi versus Sith back and forth. Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think the ending of book two is maybe my favorite of the entire three. And again, it's a darker ending, but I love this struggle for survival. We're being hunted by the Jedi, and we've been able to out-trick and outmaneuver them. The whole series is good. I recommend it very highly. At the same point, I think book two is, I felt like we got most bang for our buck in the second one.
So I'm one of those people that thinks when you're looking at a trilogy or a longer series of things, like I like the show Turn on Netflix, I believe it was on AMC, but the first episode's like an hour and a half long, very slow, very detailed, because it's laying the groundwork for the other episodes coming up. I thought The Phantom Menace, a lot of people give it a lot of hooey. The Phantom Menace over years, I still think stands up. And let's face it, it was that opening chapter to where people had to say, who are these people? Why am I interested? Why am I here? So the first book, you're right, did that. I thought it laid it out perfectly. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, it was more deep and more, you know, background and everything like that. Again, I like The Empire Strikes Back. Why? Because it takes those characters you've fallen in love with now, goes deeper into them, right? Yep. Same thing with this. But you know, I love Return of the Jedi because it tied everything up. I love this third book because not only did it tie a lot of things up, but I really still go back to that prison area right there. I thought, man, that was some of the best story right there, that prison, you know, the underground prison thing. So there's good parts in all of it. But yeah, I two thumbs up from you and me. I know Alfie loves it. I know Brent loves it. I really think, what I hate is at one point in time, there was a Darth Bane and maybe a Darth Xana action figure out there. You can't find those anymore. It'd be nice to bring those
back.
Not
on eBay or anything?
Oh, you can. They're expensive.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it's not a matter of I can't find it. It's a matter of I don't have the dollars in my bank account to make that.
Right.
Or so, the need to have that happen.
I need to make this series canon again so Hasbro will come out with the characters again. You know, a refresh
only
version.
If they have the Orbalisk armor.
Ooh. Yeah.
On the top. I found a picture. I'll send it to you on once we start doing these shows more on YouTube and get that up, which shameless plug for the YouTube channel that's coming up that we're starting. I'll start screen sharing that stuff when we see it. But I found a picture online of a visual representation of the fight between Farfalla and Johan and Bane. And it's not what I thought he'd look like. So I'll send it to you and you could take a look, maybe post it somewhere later.
Yeah, we'll post it up on Twitter, but yes, you're right. We're going to start a YouTube channel. We're just getting everything set up on that studio wise and internet wise. We're excited about that. Look, this was the third part of Lothal Library. You and I, after the show, we'll talk and we'll talk to maybe some of the other guys and see what book we want to follow up with. I know there's plenty out there and we could do another one here in a few weeks. And I think it's good because this is a shortened version. You know, it's an hour long of what happened in this book, which if you do it on audio is, you know, 12 hours long. So, man, I can't thank you enough, Nick. Thanks for taking the time. Let's get this rock and roll. We'll do another Lothal Library soon. And for all you listeners out there, this will be out. By the time you get this, a few days later, we'll have the regular Rule of the Galaxy. I believe episode chapter 32 will be next after this. So thank you all for listening. Thanks for being a part of Rule of the Galaxy. Thanks for being a part of Lothal Library. Again, you can always follow us at Rule the Galaxy SW on Twitter, and you can email us at rulethegalaxysw@gmail.com. And until a few days from now, may the Force be with you.